This week on Tech News Weekly, we talk to Evan Blass from EvLeaks and VentureBeat about all the new Google products. Plus, we talk to Katie Kelly from Altspace VR, which recently was purchased by Microsoft. And we talk to Tony Rom from Recode about all the political stuff going on with Facebook and Twitter and not Snapchat. And we spoke to Ryan Hoover of Product Hunt about all the latest VR apps and his newest endeavor called Ship. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Weekly is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode number one, recorded Thursday, October 4th, 2017. Hello. And welcome to Tech News Weekly. This is a show where every week we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news. I'm Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is on vacation this week, but I'm excited to welcome four tech newsmakers and breakers. This week, Microsoft announced their purchase of virtual reality social network, Altspace VR, saving the company from shutting down. Joining us to talk about the news is Katie Kelly from Altspace and now from Microsoft. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Hi, it's very nice to be here.
So I spent some quality time in Altspace VR. I hung out by a virtual fire. I chatted with some people and a robot bee. For those people who don't know what Altspace VR is, can you give us a little explanation about what it is?
Of course. Altspace VR is a social VR platform. So it's basically a lot of different things, but our main goal is to be a very friendly, inviting place for people to hang out in virtual reality. So we do everything from live events, which we've done with amazing comedians like Reggie Watts and Drew Carey. And then we've also partnered with NBC to do live streams of the debates and brought in some of their talent to do live shows in VR and live news events. And then we do simple things like meetups. We have an LGBT meetup that meets up once a week with people all over the world. And it's just a great place to connect in virtual reality.
So what kind of hardware do you need to participate?
So we're cross-platform. It's a very integral to who we are. So we work on Vive and Oculus Rift and Daydream and Samsung Gear VR. And you can also access us via 2D on PC and Mac.
So like I said, I spent some time there. And what I noticed mostly was the people that just felt really comfortable there. It was definitely a community. I felt that right away. People understood each other. They were really welcoming also. And right after I spent that time, the news hit that you guys were shutting down. Can you tell us about that?
Oh my, it's been such a roller coaster. Palmer Luckey tweeted 2 days ago that he thought it was the biggest tech turnaround in history. I mean, I don't know if we're quite that far, but it was definitely a roller coaster. So what happened back in early August, we found out that we had to close down. We had run out of funding and unfortunately had to shut the doors, and we told our community, and it was terrible. We had people that had made their friends, had met their partners, had come just for a place to hang out in virtual reality, and they had to say goodbye to their home, and we had to say goodbye to our jobs in a place we loved. And then we shut the doors. But Altspace kept going. We tried to keep it alive as much as we could. And then we found out just very recently that Microsoft has acquired us, and we had a welcome back event in Altspace where there were hugs and tears and screams, and it was just such a joyful celebration that we tried so hard to be the pioneers in virtual reality. And the community's response after we shut down, and they took to Twitter, they took to Facebook, just talking about how much they loved it, and people noticed. And so our team connected with Alex Kitman over at the mixed reality team over in Microsoft, and he just shared our vision and really wants to keep the community alive. So we get another shot, and I'm so ecstatic. And I lead the engagement team at Altspace. So my job is really to make an awesome experience for our community and our users. So I'm so excited I get to keep doing that.
That's so great. I mean, that must be such, you know, we think about this so much in this industry that's just moved by money and, you know, not by the people using the products. But this is an example of it really being like, hey, this is our community. This is our town square. Don't shut it down. That's great.
Exactly.
I do have a question, though. You said there were tears. Are there tears in Altspace? Can you cry? And is there a difference between sad tears and tears of joy?
Oh my goodness, there's so many ways to express emotions in Altspace. We have emojis that you can choose from a variety of different emotions, but we do have a little sad face that comes up, and that one came up a lot when we were closing down. So, but we also have hearts and claps and plenty of ways to show jubilant emotions too.
So how do you think things are going to change? Did everyone on your team move over to Microsoft?
No, so it's a solid group of us across the team that will be going up to Redmond, and the biggest thing that I was really excited about from the Microsoft side is that they want Altspace VR to stay Altspace VR. So really our main task over the next couple of months / next year is to make sure that we keep the community alive and vibrant and do all the things that we were doing before that just made us stand out and hopefully just do more of it. So tons of great events, amazing meetups, and getting our community really jazzed to come back.
I mean, I look at the way, you know, Microsoft bought Minecraft, I think in 2014, and they've really left them alone in a lot of ways. They promoted them. They've arguably, like, you know, done some great things that they might not, that Minecraft might not have been able to do on their own. Is that what you're hoping for Altspace VR?
I think everything they've communicated to us so far has been that they love what we did and they want to keep that going. So I think we have a lot of freedom right now to just use their resources and their amazing expertise. I mean, our resources, our amazing expertise. So excited I'm a part of that team. To do what we were doing before and just do it more, do it better. And yeah, it's really exciting.
So I know diversity and inclusion is really important to you, especially in VR. And I've talked to some women in VR who say, you know, this is a great opportunity because it's a new space. So it's, you know, it's not already been completely taken over by men. It's a world in which women can really thrive. Have you seen that?
Well, it's definitely a new frontier. And that's one reason that I definitely wanted to get in, especially with the fact that nobody knows what this technology is going to be yet. So we might as well have as diverse of participants as possible to make sure that technology relates to everybody. So yeah, I think with Altspace VR, especially because we're a social platform, we are only as good as the diverse amount of amazing people that are in our service. So when it comes to moderation and fostering a good community through having really strong community standards, we have 24-hour customer support team members that are always in Altspace. And again, we're ramping that up to make sure that there's somebody that's always there that you can talk to and communicate with and can hopefully help to promote like a really awesome place that you want to be. And it works. And especially too, the fact that we are cross-platform, that we work on mobile headsets. So Daydream and Gear VR users can hang out with Vive and Oculus users. That creates like this whole varied degree of people that you're going to meet. You're going to meet somebody from across the world. You're going to meet somebody that has a different life story than yours. And you're going to engage and talk. Like we had a conversation after the election last year, the day after, and we invited everybody in our community to come and just talk about their feelings. And it was people from across the spectrum of political beliefs, and they talked. It was amazing. If anything, I left the thing feeling like we were all in this together. And so I feel like we have the chance with all our different events and all our different diverse community members to create a really exciting universe where you can actually step outside of your bubble.
And so what about trolls? I know that Altspace VR is relatively anonymous, and anonymity often causes trolls to thrive. How is trolling different in VR than it is, say, like on Twitter or Facebook?
Well, anonymity is really interesting in VR because you feel like you are actually there. So you feel like a person. So you're already kind of embodying this physical space that you don't normally feel on a YouTube comment section. So what we found is that when people are in VR, they actually do feel like a person. And the culture in Altspace, when you go in, you go to our campfire spaces, which is one of our main kind of hangout spaces, there's going to be a community of people there that are kind of already creating a culture is kind of the best way to state it. So as soon as you go to a bar or you go to a park, you're going to look for what the society is kind of expecting of you. And we find that in AltSpace, because our community is really positive, that people that go in there, they want to fit in, they want to make friends. So in general, we found that people want to be kind and welcoming so that they can fit in and they can also feel like they are, they can create friends. So the trolls definitely exist. They're definitely there. And I think we do a couple of things to make sure that that people have tools at their disposal to address trolls. So you have a mute button that you can mute any user that you would rather not hear from. You can block somebody so that the, you no longer see them and they'll never, no longer see you. We have the moderation team that you can go and talk to. We have a support kind of hotline or ticket center where you can submit any problems that you have. So we have a couple different ways so that you can try to create a really awesome experience around you. But even outside of that, again, the community itself is creating the community around it that is really positive.
What, can you talk about the personal space bubble a little bit that you created?
Yeah. Oh, good. You mentioned one. I forgot. So yeah, personal space bubble. That was one of the first things that we created. It was actually really cool too, because it was a team of women predominantly that built that feature, especially when we saw that this was affecting a lot of our female users. So it was a female engineer, female PM, and a female head of product. And then I was really integral because I cared about this problem a lot. So we really thought about, like, how do we create an awesome experience? And if somebody is constantly getting into your space, it's not going to be an awesome experience anymore. So we created a bubble that's about probably an arm's length that you can turn on. It's automatically turned on when you come into AltSpace VR so that people can only get so close to you. But if you're around friends, and we have plenty of different ways that you can engage with your friends by either creating friend-only spaces or you can friend people so that you can always like be around the people that you have a relationship with, then you can turn off your space bubble and you can kiss on the cheek or high five, like all these different interactions that you choose to have with people that you feel comfortable with.
So if people are excited and they want to join the community, where do they go?
So altvr.com has all the information that you need. And if you are, have a Vive and a Rift, a Daydream or a Gear VR, you can go to the store and type in AltSpace VR. And you'll see that. And then as soon as you sign up, you can always opt out. But if you choose to get our newsletter, we'll send out once a week and you'll get it right from me. And we'll tell you about all the cool stuff that's going on.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Katie Kelly is a senior program manager at AltSpace VR. And she is OKKDK on Twitter. Thanks for coming on.
It was nice meeting you. Thank you so much.
David from Clarkston, Michigan, wrote in about a comment I made about installing Mac OS High Sierra to let you stop autoplaying audio in Safari. And I lamented that you couldn't do the same thing with Chrome. David says you can right-click on a tab and choose Mute Tab. Then anything opened under that tab will be muted. It's true. Thank you, David. If you have tips, comments, suggestions, criticisms, special emoji that you want to email us, we're here. We're listening. We're reading tnw@twit.tv. And if you want to send a video of us, of yourself, do that too. Record a video or a voice message, email it to us. Throw it up on YouTube if it's a video. We want to hear from you. The Google event, of course, happened this week. The Made by Google event. Lots of big announcements. And here to talk to us about all of them is Evan Blass from VentureBeat. Welcome, Evan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you might know Evan as EvLeaks on Twitter. He was also the man who says he was voted biggest gossip in his senior yearbook. welcome. The Pixel 2 is a reality. You called it. How does it feel the day after the event when all of the leaks, all the things that you've gotten out there have been verified?
I mean, it's always a good feeling to know that you were right. Or I guess it's, at this point, it's sort of a better feeling to just know that you weren't wrong. Yeah. When you get something wrong, it's just, you'll hear no end of it. And that's all the people ever remember, you know. they don't remember the bunch of stuff you got right. They remember the few things that you got wrong. So you want to keep those really to a minimum.
I don't ever remember you getting anything wrong, Evan, and I follow you very closely. So was there anything that surprised you about the event? Anything that you didn't get wrong but didn't realize was going to be announced?
Sure. I mean, Google's smart, you know, just like they know that the longer a time period between an announcement and a product release, the less likely something's going to get leaked. And so they had a few things here that aren't coming out until November or December. And, you know, with that much of a time delta, there was less likelihood that they would be revealed beforehand. In this case, there were a few things that the larger Google Home speaker, the Max, I think it was, the earbuds people had heard about, but I don't think we knew all the features, and we certainly didn't know about the sort of one killer app that it has, which is the real-time two-way language translation. And then also that little Google Clip camera, the one that uses AI to determine when to take photos and lets you be in the pictures yourself. So, you know, the combination of all those products, I think. And I think that also proves that just because, you know, a few things before an event doesn't mean that the whole event is necessarily spoiled. Even, you know, Droid Life had pictures of quite a few of these products beforehand, a few weeks beforehand, but, you know, they didn't have everything. So, you know, Google, they knew what they were doing here.
So let's talk about those headphones with the real-time translation for people who missed the event. Do you know how that works, the real-time translation?
It uses you know, Google's translation engine, which has improved a lot in the last year or so because of machine learning, and I think it needs to be, you know, connected to the internet while you're speaking to the other person. And they did a demo on stage. I wasn't paying too close attention, but it sounds like, you know, the earbuds have a mic. They listen to what the other person's saying and it translates it and then speaks the translation into your ear and does the same for the other person if they have the buds too.
So the Pixel 2 is $649 for the 64 gigabyte, $749 for the 128. The Pixel 2 XL is $849 for the smaller version, $949 for the larger version. Ships November 15th. Black, clearly white, and kind of blue. Pre-orders started yesterday. What do you think of the phones? I know you said you're a Galaxy S8 user, S8 Plus user. Do you like these phones?
Yeah, I feel like I have to agree with a lot of people that I feel like the smaller one wouldn't necessarily be for me, just because I don't think it has quite as modern a look as the 2 XL. But I think the bigger one, which was made by LG, looks quite nice. It was in a lot of ways it looks like the V30. That LG just came out with, which, you know, I also thought was a good-looking phone. And what really separates, I think, the Pixels from other Android handsets, and, you know, what Google's been pushing with all their products is the software and how their big bet on AI can really be leveraged to create improved user experiences across quite a number of different product types.
So you cover a lot more than Google stuff, and like I said, you don't use a Google phone right now. Alan Kay is famous for saying that people who really care about software should make hardware. Do you agree with that? I mean, what do you think overall of Google's move into hardware?
I think it's well, they've, you know, had their toe dipped in hardware for a little while now with, you know, they've sold Nexus devices for quite a few years. I think on the one hand, from Google's perspective, and the consumer's perspective, it's a good thing because it helps Google really showcase the best of what their software can do. And it also leverages to a maximum degree all of the different products that they offer, and you know, sort of their vision of how the software should be working in coordination with the hardware. But that being said, it's also a risky move because, especially with these Android phones with the Pixels, you have Google competing directly with its licensees. And that's something you don't see too much, although, you know, we're seeing Microsoft do that now with its Surface line of products. But we're hearing that that may even be, you know, something that Microsoft's eventually going to get out of. And if these Pixel phones become popular enough, you may see some pushback on the part of the OEMs who license Android, and you know, because Google has an innate advantage in that they can, you know, give themselves the earliest look at all of the Android upgrades, the best features. They can really tailor the entire phone experience to be much tighter than even, you know, the biggest of the manufacturers like Samsung.
So what will you be following next? What leaks are you chasing? What are the big stories in that we should be looking out for next?
You know, we're heading into sort of like one of the two big dead zones of the year for the mobile industry. I think that the next really big launch is going to be by Huawei, the Mate 10 and its different variants. But after that, it's sort of it's really kind of dead through the holidays right up until pre-CES. You know, it'll start to pick up again. But this is, I guess you could call it my vacation. But you know, I still have to keep working, so it just it means that, you know, if you're a small manufacturer and you're looking to get noticed, this is probably a good time of the year to introduce your products because you're not going to see too much competition.
That's good advice. So you cover not just Android, you cover all mobile for VentureBeat, right?
I'm platform agnostic, yes.
So have you gotten your hands on the iPhone X yet?
No, I don't get my hands on very much at all. The only people who are going to have actual iPhone X's now are, you know, people or reviewers and, you know, probably some influencers that Apple really likes, and I doubt that I'm on that short list.
Well, Evan Blass, thank you so much for joining us. Evan Blass is a mobile reporter for VentureBeat. He is Ev Leaks on Twitter, and follow him. And he has the stories, and not the products, but the stories. So thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
Sure thing. Thanks again for having me.
So today we have not one, but two TNW fans of the week. The first is Tyler, who appears to be watching us on a Google Daydream VR headset. And he says, best tech show podcast out there. And Tyler said this even before we had our first episode. So hopefully we can live up to Tyler's VR dreams. That's pretty awesome. He is watching our episode zero in VR. And our other fan, Vincent, is also watching us in VR. We can watch and listen to the video that he posted.
On No S Pen Left Behind, Jason said the next step would be to watch it in VR. So that's what I'll be doing.
So he'll be watching in VR. Thank you. Watch however you want. Hopefully we'll be playing somewhere in AltSpace VR too. Show us how you watch or listen. Take a picture of yourself or your setup and put it on Google+, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you do your social medias. Put it up there and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNW and we will find it. In an internal investigation earlier this year, Facebook discovered that they'd inadvertently sold ads to Russian-backed entities that might have been designed to influence the presidential election. They've given copies to Justice Department Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and this week both Facebook and Twitter have agreed to testify before U.S. lawmakers as part of their larger probe. Recode reporter Tony Rahm has been following all of this up close, and he's here to talk to us about it. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell us what you know about these hearings.
Yeah, so it's looking like it's going to be a bit of a grilling for Facebook and Twitter and probably Google. But, you know, as you sort of said to start the segment, you have to rewind the clock a little bit to about the beginning of September as these companies began to take a real, true, hard look at what happened on their platforms ahead of Election Day. And the revelations began with Facebook, which shared on September 6th that there were about 470 accounts tied to agents in Russia that had purchased about 3,000 and advertisements that sought to cause trouble around Election Day. And those ads weren't just, you know, about Hillary Clinton or about Donald Trump. The lion's share of those ads, which have not been released, really sought to sow political unrest by stoking tensions around racial or religious issues, things like Black Lives Matter and gun control and LGBT rights. After Facebook found that and presented it to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, Twitter did its own search and found about 200 accounts similar to the ones that Facebook had discovered that had Russian ties. And so Twitter presented its information to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. And really what's happening right now is that tech company after tech company is asking the question of what happened on their platform, who did they sell some of these ads to, what sort of effect did they have on the way that folks discussed the issues. And these are the same questions that the House and Senate Intelligence Committees will ask at upcoming hearings. And the one that we know for sure is the Senate Intelligence Committee, which will hold its session on November 1st.
So you wrote earlier that Snapchat looked on their platform and didn't have any problems. So are we to believe that we're living in a world where, like, the only news we can trust is from Snapchat?
No, it's certainly not like that. And we're still actually waiting for a lot of other companies to say something. Google is the big one. Google hasn't presented any information about what happened in terms of the ads that it sold or with the videos that have been uploaded to YouTube that suggest a potential Russian tie. And Google is supposed to provide some of that information in the coming weeks. And it's also been invited to testify before House and Senate investigators. It just hasn't said if it's going to actually do that. So still a lot of other companies we're waiting to hear from. But, you know, if you talk to a company like Facebook, the thing that they tell you is that they think their platform is so big, has so many users, it has so many ideas that the good ideas, the smart ones, the correct ones, the real news, so to speak, those things tend to flow through the top. But I think, if anything, this situation has really demonstrated to us that algorithms can easily be gamed and that state-sponsored actors, Russia and otherwise, have certainly done so in an attempt to cause political and social unrest.
So what are the investigators, the Senate investigators, really concerned about? I mean, are they going to buy the, oh, it's the algorithm's fault?
Well, this is part of a much broader investigation about Russian interference in the election. And, you know, we're talking about this because we're tech nerds and we care about the impact it has on the companies that we cover and that we follow. But really, this is a small slice of the committee's larger work to figure out what happened before and after Election Day. But, you know, I think that there's an understanding among folks on the committee that Facebook and Google and Twitter probably should have done more. They probably should have been more aware of what was happening on their platforms, but also recognition that, you know, now they know and now they have to do something about it. And that's true about Congress as well. That's why folks like Senator Mark Warner are starting to talk about the need for legislation to regulate these companies and the ways that they accept political ads and the mechanisms that they have in place for review for folks like you and I who want to have a better sense as to where that content might be coming from and how we may have been targeted in the first place.
So television is highly regulated. I'm sure there are lots of algorithms used in the television business, but they're not used to deliver ads to certain people yet. Why do you think social media is not regulated? And what do you think would happen if it was if it were regulated like television?
Well, one of the things that's important to remember about television is that broadcasters, whether it's TV or it's radio, are required to keep what's called a public file. They have to make available copies of the advertisements that ran during TV shows and during radio shows and so forth so that the public can come review it. And it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it's adding a level of transparency so you can get a better sense as to what was shown maybe when you weren't watching those networks or listening to those networks, but also because it does give you some context clues, right? You know, if you're a member of Congress advertising during The Price is Right, you're probably not looking to talk to like 20-somethings. like you're kind of looking for a slightly older crowd. You can get a better sense based on the time and the show against which that ad ran, who the advertiser was trying to target. But that's not really, like, you can't do that same analysis sometimes with social media networks. A lot of it's happening behind the scenes. It's unclear even outside of a political context why I see the ad I see versus why you see the ad that you see. And there's this question as to whether there should be more transparency around that, and if social media companies like Facebook and Twitter should have to do the same thing that television companies and broadcast networks of all stripes have to do, which is make political ads available for public inspection. And you're starting to hear tech companies talk about doing some of this on their own after Facebook announced some of its findings about Russian interference on its platform. The company committed to putting up new transparency hubs so that voters and users could get a better sense of the ads that have been purchased by political organizations and the ads they're seeing versus what some of their friends and their peers might be seeing. So there's a recognition, I think, in Silicon Valley that there's a need to rethink this targeting, but it's really a big black box. I think most Americans don't know why they see what they see, and that seems to be a problem, as we're discovering in the context of the election.
So Facebook is going, Twitter's going, Google hasn't said whether they're going. Who are they going to send? Is Mark Zuckerberg going to go? Who are these companies going to send to testify?
They haven't said anything. We've sort of put our heads together to figure out who it might be. I think Facebook is more inclined probably to send Alex Stamos, who's their chief security guy, to come testify. He's testified before in Washington, D.C., so he's got some experience around that sort of thing. With Twitter, we know that the company's vice president for global policy, Colin Crowell, did the briefing behind the scenes for House and Senate investigators. But again, we don't know if he's going to be the one who ultimately testifies. None of the executives have said anything either way. I think sort of interestingly, Facebook might have its earnings on the same day that this Senate hearing is happening. So, you'll have to check that. But I'm pretty sure that they're having earnings, and that adds another layer of complexity to all this. And with Google, as you rightly pointed out, they haven't said if they're attending. But I think it's safe to say if the company doesn't volunteer to attend, it's staring down the possibility of a subpoena from the committee, which could force it to attend. So I think there's a good chance that Google is going to be up there on November 1st as well.
So I made a joke earlier about Snapchat, like, being the only source of trusted news. But why is it that they didn't fall into these? Why fall prey to these Russian-backed ads? I mean, is it because they're skewed to a younger audience? Is it that? What is it that's different about them and Facebook that really they were able to say, our hands are clean?
There are many, many differences, and it starts with how you purchase ads, and how you put content up. I mean, remember, there is no central, widely available news feed on Snapchat. It's the content that you exchange with your friends, the people that you allow to receive those snaps and to follow you, and the folks that can see your story. And even for the content that's posted on Snapchat Discover, all of that it's a very limited number of partners who can do that. The Russian intelligence agencies can't take out a tab on Snapchat Discover without setting up a deal with Snapchat. So that by itself makes it very difficult for anyone to really game the system. And then when you're talking about ads are a much smaller business for a company like Snapchat. And most of the selling is done in a way that puts those ads in front of humans who have to approve them. Geofilters can be bought online, but all of those geofilters that are political in nature are seen by a human before that they're approved. And for the video ads that run between entries on one story, those have to go through manual review as well. And that's much different than what happens on a platform like Facebook and Google, where a lot of it is automated and tied to very specific interests. And there are thresholds for when those ads do and don't appear. Those platforms are so big and they sell so many ads that I don't know if the system would allow for that sort of human review. But companies are trying. Facebook, as part of its push for more transparency, said it would hire about 1,000 new employees, focused specifically on vetting ads, while investing an undisclosed sum in machine learning so that it can spot some of the ads that are most problematic. But you know, with respect to Snap, it's just a much smaller, more closed platform. So it was unlikely that it was going to have the kind of trouble that Facebook did. But in its review, it can confirm that it did not have the trouble that Facebook did.
So these hearings, are they public or are they closed to press?
They're public. This is one of the few instances in which the House and Senate Intelligence Committees are going to do their work out in the open. They don't always do it that way, but the November 1st hearing, which is the only one that's officially been scheduled, is definitely out in the open.
So will you be there?
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
All right. Well, I hope to talk to you after that and get your thoughts on from inside the room. Thank you, Tony, so much for talking to us. Tony Rahm, whose name I often mispronounce, but I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly, is the editor of Policy and Politics at Recode, and he is Tony Rahm on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been an exciting week for AR apps, and who better to talk about this than Ryan Hoover, founder of Product Hunt. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, Megan. Been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. You've been busy, and I have to say I've been hounding you, but you're so nice when I email you every few months. And so I'm so glad that you are on our premiere episode of Tech News Weekly. You've been living in augmented reality. You agreed to talk about some of your favorite apps. So the first one, KabaQ AR for augmented reality food. I tried this when it first came out, and I couldn't really see the point because I like my food in real reality so that I can eat it. How do you use this app?
Yeah, so you know, there's a number of different apps that I forwarded on to you before this. I mean, Product Hunt has been filled with different AR apps, particularly because ARKit just launched in public recently. And there's a lot of different apps, this one being one of them, which is just really unique and interesting. And maybe the long-term use case is somewhat questionable, but I found this is a really interesting application of AR. And, you know, traditionally you look at menus, flat 2D menus at a restaurant, and you see these pictures which, you know, show some of the food, but you can't really get a real sense of what it looks like or even how big it is. One of my questions at restaurants is like, how big is this plate? How is it going to be enough food? So this is an app that basically virtualizes the food in front of you through your device, through your iPhone or iPad. So you can see that juicy hamburger and see kind of what it looks like, you know, before you order it on your plate virtually. So pretty, this video is ridiculous too. The kid is licking the iPad. Don't do that, kids.
Right.
Or don't recommend that.
Yeah, that is a good point. Now, I've heard it just being used as, you know, if you're in a restaurant with food you don't recognize from a different country and you don't really, you want to see it first. But the idea, yeah, when I go out to eat with my husband, he's always like, is that going to be enough food for me? Like, I need to know. And so maybe this will be his use case for augmented reality. Now, Snap, makers of Snapchat, they have a augmented reality platform called Snap Art. It lets you pin art in different places. How does that work?
Yeah, so this is an idea that's been in different variations tried by their smaller companies. I've seen a number of different apps out there that less so using AR, but more about pinning different messages or pictures or things to locations. And so variations of this idea have been tried. Snap, of course, is well positioned to make this a really interesting social interaction where essentially what you can do, what they're starting off as, is enabling you to find Jeff Koons, the famous pop artist, his art around the world. So you can go to, kind of like Pokemon Go, you can go to specific locations to find his art and explore and discover what he's, or what Snap has kind of put around the world. And of course, this is kind of like the pilot and intro demonstration of what they can do with this platform. But they're starting to take requests from other artists as well. So you can imagine it starting with people as famous as Jeff Koons to maybe some like mid-level, lesser-known artists. And eventually everyone maybe in the world could create some sort of piece of art to place in front of their house, in front of their work, maybe as a gift to their girlfriend. I can see microtransactions kind of coming into play where, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for in-app purchasing. I think where it gets really interesting, though, is when it moves off the phone and when it moves into your eyes. And you know, wondering, I'm very curious what Snap does with Spectacles and what that evolves into longer term, where you can potentially see these things, you know, as you're walking around with regular glasses or something that looks like those.
Were you suggesting that an augmented reality gift would be good for a girlfriend?
It's the thought that counts, right?
No. If the augmented car or diamond ring or new iPhone actually then became the real thing, that would be okay. But just in augmented reality, don't do that.
I know. We'll see.
So the idea of, like, yeah, carrying your phone around versus wearing glasses, I mean, that really comes into play in a lot of new apps. There's Dance Reality is another one that was featured on Product Hunt. It's dance practice in augmented reality. It puts footprints on the floor, so, and you have to follow them. But I can't imagine actually dancing while you're holding your iPad or your iPhone in your hand.
Yeah. This is another example of a really cool, interesting idea that I actually haven't tried it yet, so I can't fully judge it. But it's kind of questionable how useful it is to teach you to dance. However, I wanted to kind of illustrate or highlight this app as a unique, interesting kind of example of how AR can be used for instructions. Like, you could imagine applications similar to this for golf or for basketball. Basically, all those things that a real person, a real coach kind of teaches you when you're in person, whether it's dancing and other sports. I could imagine through some AR type headset to kind of instruct and give you some feedback loops on how you're moving or how you should move potentially. So, you know, there's a lot of different toys, dance reality being one of them, that people are creating that could evolve and inspire new ideas that actually are very useful and maybe change the way that people learn sports or other activities like that.
So AR lyrics, that's the next one. It's see song lyrics in augmented reality. How is that better than just seeing song lyrics? I guess, I mean, I see song lyrics on my Echo Show, which I have, which is nice. So I get it if everyone doesn't have that. How does this work?
This is just cool. I think it's it's one of those things that is just super creative. So when you watch the video, and you're probably seeing it right now on the screen, you can see that the lyrics themselves are sort of coming out from where the sound is being played. And, you know, it's maybe not the most utilitarian, like the easiest way to follow the lyrics, but it's kind of a cool visualization of how lyrics could be surfaced using sound recognition and AR itself. And still going back to the future of, you know, whatever we put on our eyes in the future, having this ability to read the lyrics around the world, maybe when you're at a concert, for example, having the ability to see the lyrics and sing along and that kind of thing is really compelling and interesting. Lyrics is one very particular use case, but you can imagine lyrics or data or information layering on top of the real world in similar ways.
Right. Like, that's what we've seen when you imagine, like, the Minority Report kind of thing, but in a good, not creepy way.
Yeah. Well, there'll be a lot of really creepy, weird stuff, I'm sure, with AR and many other technologies as happens, but a lot of it will also change the way that we, you know, behave and function in our daily lives. So,
yeah, and I think that, you know, we just have to look at it in terms of, I think it's a lot like the Apple Watch. A lot of people try to sell the Apple Watch in terms of, you don't have to have your phone around all the time. Like, you can, you know, do everything you need and not be tethered to this phone. There was, somebody sent me for a review, Seedling, I think. It was an augmented reality teddy bear. And what I like about it is that the teddy bear itself is just a toy. It has no cameras in it. It has no Wi-Fi, no batteries, nothing. It's just your good old-fashioned teddy bear that we all had when we were kids. And then you can layer on with your iPad or your iPhone, like, other fun things. Like, you can give the teddy bear an X-ray or something like that. So it's nice because then it's also just a toy. So I see that as, like, maybe we will have this ubiquitous computing where, like, we're not tied to the devices so much. We're more in the real world, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I'm thinking about Halloween coming up and what the future of Halloween might look like. Maybe in the future you don't actually physically dress up, but you just click a button and you choose what costume you want people to see you as. So there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of sci-fi weird stuff going to happen in the future. I'm seeing Blade Runner tonight, so maybe that'll be a preview of some of the things we also see on Product Hunt 5 20 years out in the future.
Yeah, I have wanted to, the Snapchat filters, I much prefer those to any costume that I've found yet in the costume store. So if I could just...
It's so easy, too. You just press the button and you're done. You don't have to, you know, wipe the makeup off and do all that.
Mm-hmm. So any other AR apps that that have been on Product Hunt lately that we should take a look at?
One other one that I find interesting is MakeSpace. And this is essentially an app that allows you to measure things in your home. So I recently moved and I ended up buying a bunch of furniture. And one of the someone I was working with was just asking a very simple question, like how big is your room? And I had no idea. It was like I could measure with my feet. But what it does and enables you is to accurately measure anything, really. So it could be the space, your room, could be a table, could be a couch. Really, it's like a simple tool that you traditionally would have to have like a measuring tape for. It's kind of a really well-executed version of that. I think we've seen a lot of different measuring AR apps out there. I think someone was joking the other day that it's kind of like the modern-day flashlight app that we saw back in 2009. Everyone was building them. But that said, it's actually like a utility that's now possible using ARKit, which wasn't possible before.
So you launched Product Hunt. What year did Product Hunt launch? Was it 2015,
14? Technically, the end of 2013.
And now you have Ship, which is another way to help people launch their products. Tell us about Ship.
Yeah. So we launched this, I think it's been about a month or so. Ship is basically kind of an evolution of many things that we've learned and been playing with. Basically, what we've known for years is people on Product Hunt, they often would reach out to us and say, hey, Ryan, hey, team, we're building a product. How can we, announce it, or how can we get some feedback from users? But we're not ready to launch yet. We don't want to put it on Product Hunt yet. So for so long, we've had a lot of interest from people saying, how can I use Product Hunt while I'm building my product? And we also believe strongly that, when you build a product, you should be oftentimes talking to your users, getting feedback, ultimately building a community while you're building the product itself. We believe that is a great way to learn and at the end of the day, build a better product. So what we built is Ship, which is basically a toolkit for makers and startups to, capture emails as they're building their products, communicate with their users so they can get feedback, ask questions, and kind of create a community of their own as they're building their product, ongoing. And we see this as not just a tool for, pre-launch products per se, but also a tool you can use ongoing because you're always shipping, you're always building something. There's, when you're building products, you're never really done. So hopefully people like it. We're getting a lot of traction and interest from people, and we're excited to kind of develop the feature set going forward.
I was at TechCrunch Disrupt a couple of weeks ago, and I could feel just the, I don't want to say desperation, but it is hard. It is hard, especially I feel like right now it is really hard to ship a new product, to come up with a new idea, something that hasn't been done. It feels like though it's closing in a little bit. And so what would you say to people who are trying to develop something new? And I guess, you launched Product Hunt. It's a great success, but I'm sure there were dark times too. What was the hardest part for you about starting Product Hunt, and what advice would you give to people to get through that hard part?
Yeah, I guess building a startup or building a product, it goes through waves of excitement and loneliness and frustration and sadness and all of these things. And I think some of the hardest parts sometimes are really you don't ultimately know what's going to work before you build it. You can get a lot of data and you can have a lot of good guesses on a new idea or a new feature that you're building. We built a lot of things that have worked, a lot of things that have not worked at all, that no one used, and ultimately were a waste of time. And so I think the thing that I would encourage people to do is try to ship often and get feedback and measure and talk to users. And by doing that quickly, you're still going to build stuff that no one wants. That's just inevitability. But hopefully you'll move faster and find things that people do want, people that actually want your product. And so I don't know, it's nothing special, nothing novel in what I'm recommending, but I think it's good reminder for a lot of people who tend to stay kind of in their own bubble and think that all of their ideas are wonderful and until they launch months later and realize no one is using it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ryan. Ryan Hoover is a professional nice guy, founder of Product Hunt, managed to get through this whole without losing any of his integrity. So great to talk to you, as always. He is RR Hoover on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Megan.
Take care. And here is the rest of the news of the week. Microsoft announced that its browser Edge will soon be available on your mobile, and that includes Android phone as well as iPhone and your iPad. Starting today, iOS users can try the Edge browser on their phones with Apple Test Flight. Android users can also sign up for the Edge preview on their phones or tablets. Netflix is raising prices in the U.S. just in time for the newest season of Stranger Things that starts this month. The standard streaming service goes from $9.99 a month to $10.99 a month, and the premium service that allows you to stream on four screens at once plus Ultra HD content access goes from $11.99 to $13.99. Amazon is testing a new delivery service called Seller Flex that it plans to roll out next year. They won't be dropping UPS and FedEx, but this will give Amazon more control when they're dealing with outside merchants. Sources at Bloomberg say the service started in India a few years ago, and they will test it on the U.S. West Coast before more expansion. And finally, this week, Yahoo revealed that you can run, but you can't hide from their data breach in what appears to be an effort to one-up Equifax. Yahoo revealed this week that the search company's previously revealed hack was much bigger than they thought. Yahoo had originally said that one-third of people who had Yahoo accounts were attacked. But now Verizon, who owns Yahoo, says everyone's Yahoo accounts were hacked back in 2013. Yahoo! That is all I've got this week. Jason Howell will be back next week for this ever-evolving format of the Tech News. Tech News Weekly records live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv. You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/tnw. We appreciate everyone who has already subscribed. Thank you for sticking with us or joining us if you're new. And if you want to tweet at me about what you want to see on Tech News Weekly, I am at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical editor and director, Josh, possibly Kevin. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. And thanks to you, whoever you are, for talking tech with us today. We'll see you next week.